The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Inspiring interviews with today's top landlords. This is the Rental Income Podcast. And now, Dan Lay.
We've talked about some great real estate books on this show. If you want to see a list of all the books we've talked about, you can find it at rentalincomepodcast.com/books. Joining me on the show today is Nancy Brook. Nancy, along with her boyfriend, own 15 properties that are located in three different states. I think this is a really unique way to diversify yourself, but I also think it brings on a lot of different challenges, like how do you find properties and how do you manage properties when you're so far away? So I want to find out exactly what she's doing. Nancy, welcome to the show. Was this your plan all along? Did you plan on owning properties in different states, or did this just kind of happen?
It wasn't. I started off in Montana, so that's where I grew up, and that's where I was living at the time. Had my single-family house, and got the itch to move to Florida. So my first property was a fourplex that I was going to convert to my primary residence. So basically the three units would pay for the fourth unit. Just looking at how I did it, I might do things a little bit differently now, Dan. Definitely not the kind of return on investment that I'm getting with other properties, but for what I was trying to accomplish, totally made sense. It was an MLS deal, and that's how I got started in Florida. My goal was to move there. Well, I wanted to make sure I liked Florida before I, pulled everything out of my house in Montana. And so what I ended up doing is I got two young guys that were just out of college, or one was still in college, one had graduated. They were buddies. And I had some rooms in my basement, and so I rented out my basement to them.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And so then I had some people living in the house, and then if I wanted to come back, I could. If I was traveling, I could come back for a week or something. And so that's how I did it. I kept my house in Montana just because I wasn't sure what I was going to do. And it worked out great because when I had them here before I moved to Florida, and then they could watch my dogs when I was traveling. So
that
kind of a win.
Yeah, that really is a great way to do it. And so did you end up buying more properties in Florida, or do you just have that one fourplex that you bought?
Yeah, we went kind of crazy. So when we bought, it was, let's say, sort of the end of the bad time in Florida. There were still a lot of houses foreclosed, and there still are houses foreclosed, but the market has appreciated quite a bit. So this was beginning of 2013, so about 2.5 years ago. So our next property was a foreclosure property that we had to make a bid on. It wasn't, a formal auction. You just basically gave your best bid, and we ended up getting that property. It was 3-bedroom, 2-bath house, which we got for $48,000. So when you compare the price of property in Montana, you're probably going to get the same amount of rent for double the cost. And so when we saw these properties so cheap, we just knew that this was almost a once in a lifetime opportunity to jump on it. And sure, that's what we ended up doing. So that was our first house together, a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house.
One thing that I just can't wrap my head around, and we've talked about this a little bit on the show with some other guests, but when you're looking in another market and you see a house that's $48,000, how do you know that's a good deal?
Yeah. Well, you have to keep in mind, I was down there and I was living there.
Okay.
And so during that time period, I had an opportunity to drive around neighborhoods, to look at a lot of houses. There were many houses we made bids on that we didn't get. And okay, so we were making bids on houses. I would drive to neighborhoods. I'd have a real estate agent show me inside the house if I was interested. So I got a sense of the market. I would say it's really important, if you are investing out of market, you don't necessarily just want to start buying whatever, you hear about these Detroit properties that are $1,000. You don't just want to buy $1,000 property without understanding what's happening.
Right.
So you do need some, either you have to go there yourself or you need somebody there who can be your advocate. That's what I would say.
So how did you find a real estate agent that would, I guess a lot of real estate or agents are used to working with people that are going to live in the house, and they're not always, I guess, trained or comfortable working with investors, or they don't understand that as an investor, it's more about the numbers than it is an emotional connection to the house. So how did you find an agent that would work with you as an investor? Was that hard at all?
Well, the first agent I used was the one I bought my fourplex with, and she was a nice lady. She was not an investor, but she had no problem showing me houses that I asked to be shown. So at least she was very willing and accommodating. So I would say at the very least, you need that. What I ended up with is after this first property, we needed a property manager just because I knew I didn't want to be managing, you know, 10 properties with this very demanding full-time job. So what I ended up doing is my property manager is also a broker. And so I would have him eventually just go look at the houses, tell me what kind of repairs he saw, and let me know what he could rent it for. And so it kind of covered all the bases with that one real estate broker, which to me worked very well.
That's really good. Yeah, because he knows the rental market and he also knows the sale market. So yeah, I guess having a broker that also works with rentals is really smart. And you're still working with him today?
I do. He's a property manager. You know, we haven't purchased any new property on the MLS. I'm just trying to remember the last one we bought. It's been a while. The most recent properties I've gotten from mailings. So I haven't bought any from MLS lately.
So what are you mailing out?
I mail out postcards. I mail out postcards to absentee homeowners, so people who do not live in the house, maybe have owned the house for around 5 years and have at least 50% equity in the house. That's who I target.
And are these like handwritten letters you're sending out, or is it like a postcard? Like what exactly are you sending?
It's a postcard that encourages them to call an 800 number. I have important information about their house. So I keep it generally vague so they call in. And when they call in, they get a recorded message that explains to them that I'm interested in buying their house. They can leave a message if they want. If they don't leave a message, I still have their phone number and can call them back. So kind of a win-win, you know, for me. So.
And do you get a lot of leads off that? Like how many mailings do you need to send out to get someone to call you?
You know, I am getting around a 10% response rate.
Okay.
On the mailings. And you have to keep in mind a lot of them really are not going to be interested, but you know, maybe 1 in 10 is either interested in selling me a house or purchasing additional houses. And so when you're doing this kind of work, you want to find people who want to sell and people who want to buy so you can match the two up. That's the goal. So you can find some houses for yourself. You can find houses for other investors too.
So then you're wholesaling some of the houses. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And are you able to, are most of the people that you're mailing to, they're absentee owners? So are there other landlords that have properties that they want to sell for the most part? Is that
sometimes they want to sell? Like the latest one, the latest two that I have under contract, and hopefully we'll close on next week. The one gentleman owned multiple properties that were in rough shape. He doesn't have the money to fix them up. He wants to retire. He just wants to cash them out, buy a trailer somewhere and be able to live on the money. So for him, it's a matter of he doesn't have the money to fix them up and sell them. And so that's how he got rid of them. The other lady lives out of state. She lives in the Northeast. And so for her, she just really wanted to get rid of the property and reinvest in the Northeast so she could keep track of her property. So that, you know, that's kind of some of the stories that I hear. Sometimes people are in trouble financially, need to get rid of their properties quickly too.
And are the houses that you've been looking at, are they vacant or do they have tenants in there?
You know, the one that owns multiple properties, he lives in one of them and he has tenants in two of the other ones. One's a lot and then he has one vacant one. They're in rough shape though. We're actually planning, well, not me, the developer who's buying him is going to demo them and build an assisted living facility on it.
Okay. Wow.
The other property is Section 8. It's four bedroom, two bath. It has a tenant who's been in there 4 years. The lady who has it has done a great job of maintenance. really have no expenses coming in. So it's pretty turnkey. And it's going to be making about 20% after expenses.
Wow, that is awesome. That is really
good. It really is awesome. I have a guy who just keeps on badgering me to buy it from me. And I'm like, you know, I don't want to sell it.
Right.
Plus, it's got a big lot. And I haven't checked with the city, but I may be able to build something else on the lot eventually. So I think I'm going to keep that one.
So are you doing the mailings just in the area where you live? Or are you also mailing to the other areas?
Well, I actually am in Montana right now. And the work I do is in Florida for the most part when I'm talking about wholesaling.
Okay.
So I have a completely virtual wholesale business.
So you're not going to the house or anything. Do you have someone on the ground that'll go out there and take a look at the house?
Absolutely. So I have a handyman who will go out and check out houses for me and tell me, you know, what repairs are needed. If I had something that was more major, I could also hire a property inspector for what's called a limited inspection. I had never heard of that before. I was an investor, but you can get a limited inspection property report that will just kind of cover the major items. So I do use him from time to time as well, but he's, you know, a couple $100. My handyman is, you know, just the cost of his time to get over there and check things out.
And do you go to check out the house, like after the handyman looks at it or the home inspector looks at it, do you go to Florida or you don't even see him?
No, I don't need to see him. No.
Wow.
I mean, pictures are there. I mean, I'm not living in the place.
Yeah.
As long as, you know, I guess the other thing, if somebody's living there, you got to imagine that, you know, the house isn't falling in on them.
Right.
The water's got to be working. It has to have electricity. So if there's a problem, you're going to find out if somebody goes over there because the tenant will tell you.
And then as far as getting comps to know that this is something that'll rent for whatever the price is, then you're relying on your property manager to tell you, I can get $1,000 a month for this house or whatever it is.
You know, sometimes you end up knowing the different markets. If it's Section 8, that's pretty easy to figure out what it will rent for. So that's pretty easy. And you know that it's another property in another area, if it's in decent shape, it's at least going to rent out for what Section 8 does.
Okay.
So you get a feel for it. You can certainly ask the property manager too, and he can go over and take a look at it. Usually that's what they like to do. But a lot of times they'll just ask you what I found out. Well, what do you think you want to get for it? So sometimes I might, like one we wanted to get $695, and it ended up not renting out in the first week. If it doesn't rent out in the first week, cut the price. Get it on. So we ended up running that one for $650.
Okay.
So no big deal. It still was a lot more than the $500 we were getting before.
Now, one other thing that I want to ask you about with owning properties in different areas, are your taxes, when you file your taxes, do you have to do state returns for each state where you own properties? Or do you just do one return for the state where you live?
I do one return.
Okay.
Well, we actually have two LLCs, but we just did a return for the state in which we live.
Okay. Okay. So it's not, there's no kind of hassle owning properties in other areas. It's not, there's not a lot of paperwork or extra work at the end of the year.
It wasn't for me. You know, and my accountant, I have a CPA who's also an attorney who did my tax returns. So
there was
nothing else involved with that for me other than, you know, you have to pay the property taxes
right.
in the state.
Okay. And tell me about Ohio. We haven't touched on Ohio. So how did you end up getting involved with Ohio?
Well, like probably a lot of investors out there, I am always interested in learning more and doing training. So there was a gentleman who was offering some training. The price was pretty inexpensive, and I had gotten to know him through his podcast, through his websites, through some other vehicles like that. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, what the heck? I'm going to go to Ohio, do this training. I set it up so my boyfriend and I went there, and they had something that was a bus tour, and they showed some of the houses that they had. Now, you have to keep in mind, most of the people who were on this tour, they were wannabe wholesalers. We were already investors, and so we saw these properties, and we saw the rent that they were getting for them, and we saw the quality, and we said, heck yeah, you know, let's get one of those, and especially the one that we saw in person. And so we asked if we could buy it, and that's how we got our first Columbus, Ohio property. We were there. So we were there in person. And it's been way easier than the Florida properties, to be honest, because we have a pretty reliable ground crew there through the people who sold it to us.
Okay. And how many properties do you have in Ohio?
We have three in Ohio. Two we bought turnkey from this company. The other one we bought through an auction.
Okay. And so the turnkey, that there was tenants in place, there was nothing for you to do, right? You just had to sign the paperwork and that's it.
It was easy. It was so easy. So that one was great. You know, you pay a little more for turnkey, but you have to realize if you have people, like I mentioned, on the ground who you can trust and who takes care of everything, it's well worth it. Even if you can hire your own property manager, which we've done with our other property, you still have to go out there. You still have to meet the property manager. You still have to, you know, do the repairs. You might have some vacancy while they're finishing the repairs. So all of that said and done, you know, maybe we thought we were getting a deal. We bought the house, I think it was like $25,000, and putting, you know, $5,000 in probably in repairs. And then it's another month to vacancy. And then plus the first month he charges the fee to get the tenant in. So by the time you're looking, I don't know that we really saved much money doing it as an auction house. So that would just be something for people to think about. How much is your time worth? So, and if you're not doing it in the market, I really would say turnkey is not a bad way to go.
Is there any advice that you would give to someone to check out the turnkey company? I know there's a lot of turnkey companies out there. Some of them are good, some of them not so good. Is there anything that you would tell someone to look for that maybe would be a sign to run away, or maybe a sign that this is a good company?
Well, I guess for me, it was easy because I met the people in person and I was there and got to know them. So for me, that was easy. I would say you could ask for some references. I'm on a website and I get reference requests all the time because I've mentioned my experiences with this company. And so I have people message me all the time and ask me. I would also say that for those of you who are looking to do turnkey, you know, just ask your questions and don't just keep on hemming and hawing. If it sounds good, just take some action. Mm-hmm. A lot of people just don't want to bite the bullet. And, you know, one gentleman who kept on emailing me and wanting more references, I'm just like, you know, what's your fear here?
Right.
You know,
just
I told you they're a good company. I mean, if you want to do it, do it. And if not, then that's cool. But, you know, I've told you what I know.
Yeah, right.
So at the end of the day, real estate does involve some risk. You know, try to mitigate your risk, but sometimes you just got to take action. You're going to make some mistakes and, oh, well, you just move on. You get a little bloody sometimes. And
yeah,
and I've been there.
That's great advice. I mean, you just at some point you have to do it. I think a lot of people get caught up in that they want to know everything and they want to analyze everything to death. But it's like you got to just take action and you got to just do it at some point.
Exactly.
Well, Nancy, this was a really great interview. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Why don't you tell us where we can track you down online if someone wants to learn more about you?
Absolutely. Well, I have a blog and soon podcast at propertyadventure.com. So hit me up there and you can find out a little bit more about me and keep up with articles as they're coming out.
All right. Well, Nancy, thanks again for coming on the show. I really appreciate your time. And thank you so much for listening. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.
Some people might say coffee doesn't need chocolate, but you're not some people. You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew, topped with velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. That imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new Caramel Chocolate Cold Brew. It's a cold brew dream come true. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.